The Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab number 133 for December 24th, Christmas Eve, 2007. Folks, and welcome to the Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab. This is Dave Hamilton. Of course, I'm here with John Braun. Hi, John.
Hi, Dave.
And
usual, it's light out.
It is light out. Yes, I know. Very strange. Although I can't see that because I'm in the soundproof studio, so it's totally lightproof as well. Okay. How's your weekend been going? Your holiday weekend? We're doing this, of course, Monday morning, about 11 hours earlier than we usually do.
It's great. On vacation, taking, you know, like most people.
Yeah.
All the extra vacation at the end of the year. So, yeah, I'm off until next year.
Cool. I'm not, but that's okay. Mm. I don't mind. I enjoy nearly every aspect of my job. You know, I have to tell you, John, I went and saw Hannah Montana on Friday night, and they put on a fantastic show. Mm. Yeah. I took my daughter. She loved it.
Positive role model, unlike some other, never mind. I can reduce ourselves to talking about Britney's sister. Oh,
no. Okay. Anyway, this is the Mac Geek Gab. And of course, we have limited time. Many times I've said, oh, you know, we've got a lot of stuff to go through and not a lot of time to do it. Today, it's actually true. I've got a thing I have to do, kind of a last minute issue that I need to get taken care of. So, we've got lots to do. Yeah. All right. So let's start with some responses from last week's show. One of the things we talked about last week, quickly mentioned, was that John had an issue where installing an update, I guess the latest system software update, 2007-009, it appeared to have frozen. You had to force reboot your machine to bring it around. And when you did, it launched the setup assistant. And we wondered why that happened. And Tom wrote in and said that the setup assistant will not run if the file /var/db/.apple-setup-done with capital A, S, and D is there. So apparently once the setup assistant finishes, it goes in and touches that file, creates it out there, and then that's what gets us going. So so every time the Mac boots, it looks to see if that file's there, and if it's not, then the setup assistant runs. So go figure. That's who knows why that got blown away when you did what you did, but perhaps that's part of the update process. Yeah. Any more comments on that, or can I move on to John's comment about?
Yeah, not quite yet. Yeah, okay. I got some comments.
Okay, I will also state that update was reissued as version 1.1, I believe, on Friday. 1, 2, 3. Yeah, there was an issue, and we reported about it on TMO, where if you had a form submission button that brought you to a new frame, it would cause Safari to crash with that update installed. We reported that, I guess, early last week, right after it happened. And then Apple issued the revision to the update on Friday. So if you got the original version, make sure you take the second one. Otherwise, you'll be susceptible to the Safari crash. Along those lines, John, a different John, of course, wrote in or called in, and said this.
Hi, John and Dave. This is John from Melbourne, Florida. I was listening to your last show and heard you talking about your G5 seeming to hang after a software update. My G4 has done that several times, and what I found is that the system has not actually hung. If you look very closely and you don't have too dark of a desktop background after your dock and menu disappears, you'll be able to see the shadow of the circling cog or spoke that you normally see during the startup process, which is software update telling you it's doing things in the background. Give it a few minutes and it will eventually restart. If you interrupt it in the middle of the process, that's when you have to go through the 20 questions and letting software update finish after you boot back up. just thought you might like that information. Thanks.
Thanks, John. Okay, so, and I've seen this too, and it is kind of weird because you get essentially a blank screen, but it has your desktop picture background. And then in the very, very kind of lower middle portion of the screen, you get the little cog that spins around. But it is hard to see. Now, I'm not sure if that happened for you or not. You may not even know, John.
And I'll say it. No. So that's great advice. And yes, I can understand how that would happen. In my case, though, I know that was not the case.
Okay.
Because I had a second update come along, the one that you mentioned. I guess they had two versions of the security update, because actually, when I fired up my machine to get ready for the podcast, they said, oh, there's another update available. You want to apply it? And I'm like, no. I'm like, should I do this before a show and, you know, really risk it? And I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, all right, good.
And I did, and I saw the dialogues. I saw the spinning cog. But in this case, it did restart. So there was still, and actually we had someone write in, Will. Yeah. In Scotland, wrote in and he said, essentially, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but he basically said, John, you're not insane. The same thing happened to me. Now, what he did, and I think I may have done this too and not mention it explicitly, is he would get caught in this loop where he kept answering the questions. And actually, I had that happen to me too. And I think what we both did to get out of it eventually in desperation is that in the login screen, there's a restart button, or there usually is. I think you can disable that.
Okay.
Actually, a reason for doing that may come up in a future question. But anyway, so we had it confirmed, and, you know, like me, he didn't know anybody else that this has happened to. So that makes me feel a little bit better that I'm the only person in the world that this happened to.
Right, right. Okay, all right. Moving on, we had been talking about Robert's issue where his machine would not go to sleep. It would fall asleep, or you could tell it to go to sleep, and then within about 10 seconds, it was awake again. And we talked about some various things, and Burke had this to say.
Hey, John and Dave, it's Burke from Florida. I am actually a refugee from Massachusetts, so I enjoy hearing about your snow and cold during the Geek Gab. One of the things that I was listening in your recent podcast about sleeping is I have found that if you have a USB hub and or a USB hub and a card reader, so like a CF reader or a reader for a camera card on the machine, no matter what you do, you can't make it sleep. So that's one thing that I found, and the way I found that was going through the system log, found that information that thing was not letting it sleep. I finally gave up. I need to have the card reader on the machine. I need to have the hub on the machine, and it's just the way it is. I stopped trying to figure out how to make it sleep. So that's one thing. USB hub and or card reader attached to that hub could potentially be a problem. Enjoy the frozen north. It's beautiful here in Florida. Thanks for the show, and enjoy it very much.
Yeah, it's actually above freezing today, but I think on Saturday afternoon we had, I think, a total of about 3 feet of snow in the yard here before it started melting.
Nice. It's all gone. It got all rained on over the last couple of days.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Went away.
So Alex also wrote in with a similar suggestion and said it might be a USB card. And I forwarded this information along to Robert. And sure enough, he has two USB PCI cards in the machine. One was from an unknown manufacturer called Opti, I think was how it reported itself in System Profiler. And if I'm understanding this correctly. And he pulled that card out, and sure enough, that solved the problem. So we know the answer to the issue now, and that is a beautiful thing. Do you have anything to add on that, John, before we keep moving here?
Well, just a general reminder, if you do have these sort of problems, is that taking a systematic approach and pulling this stuff out, probably this stuff, again, like oddball, no name, because chances are the drivers may not be the most well written. Right. So stick with brand names, kids.
Our first
sponsor.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just saying I've seen this. I don't think it's as prevalent in the Mac world, but especially in the PC world. I mean, some of the stuff you have no idea where it came, or it's overseas somewhere. But from what I see, the quality can vary wildly. So, but yeah, be systematic about it, and you'll solve the problem.
There you go. Our first sponsor for this show is Audio Engine USA, of course, at audioengineusa.com. And they are the makers of the A5 and A2 desktop speakers. These speaker sets are speakers that I actually use here. I have a set of the A5s, which are the bigger version here in the studio, and I use a set of the A2s at home. The A2s are a smaller version of the same thing, two speakers in each cabinet. The cabinets are separate, so you can spread them as far out as you'd like. The A2s really fit well on a desk, and for their size, amazing ability to fill a room. The A5s are a little bit bigger, have a little bit more low end, have a little bit more projection, but certainly that's not to say that the A2s don't have enough. The A5s, in addition to all of that, have a plug port on the back, an AC port where you can hang anything you like, but really built to hang an Airport Express so that you can have an all-in-one solution. You plug in one piece to the wall, and then that's it. The speakers are self-contained with the Airport Express driving your music from your iTunes library, wherever that may happen to be. The A5 and A2 desktop speakers from Audio Engine USA at audioengineusa.com. Probably a little late to get them as a Christmas gift for someone, but you never know. Maybe you get some money for Christmas and you get a pair for yourself. After Christmas, of course, we're all going to be traveling, and Katie has some questions about that.
Hey, John and Dave, this is Katie from the MacCore podcast. I need some Mac advice, and you guys being some of the geekiest I know, this is where I turn. My question relates to securing my Mac. I know you've talked about this in the past, but I was wondering what the new options were, if any, and if anything has changed since the release of Leopard. I'm doing a lot of travel these days for work, and I opt to take my MacBook rather than the company PC most of the time just for convenience. Since I'm on the road a lot with my Mac, I'm becoming more concerned about security and making sure that should my laptop ever be stolen, that no one has access to my files. Now, I have taken some general precautions. I've turned off automatic login. I've set my MacBook to require a password when waking from sleep or a screensaver. I set my keychain to auto lock, and I have all of my financial and confidential files stored in a separate encrypted disk image inside my home folder. But I was wondering what, if anything else, I could or should be doing to secure my Mac. Obviously, a geek who has physical access to the computer can overcome most of our standard precautions. I know there are laptop security programs out there that claim to report your IP address so you can track your stolen Mac, but I wasn't sure if they were worth the money. Now, FileVault is the obvious built-in option, but to be honest, FileVault scares the heck out of me because of the possibility for data corruption and lost. I was just wondering if you could give me the rundown of what you guys do to secure your Macs and what advice you would give for someone who travels frequently. Now, I do have my laptop fully insured under a rider to my homeowner's policy, so I'm not as worried about theft, more so someone getting a hold of my data. Anyway, would appreciate any advice you could give me. I'm looking forward to meeting you guys at Macworld. And by the way, thanks for the great deal on a hotel room. Thanks, guys.
All right, John, you are Mr. Security, so I am going to let you take this and run with it.
I am? Oh, I am.
You are.
So a few things. So one, as Katie mentioned here, there are a few things that you should do up front. And where you're going to find this is, or one place to look, it would be your security control panel, system preference. So if you go to security and then general, so there's a few checkboxes here, and I'd recommend, I'll go through a few of them. So one is require a password to wake this computer from sleep or screensaver. That's a good idea. So if you walk away and it's asleep, someone can't just, and that's one big risk is, leaving your machine open when you walk away.
Yeah.
Just don't. Either sleep it or, put it on a, 5 minute or something. So if you're gone for longer than a moment, it's going to prevent somebody from getting in. Now, there's also another one, and it sounds like she enabled this, disable automatic login. And this is something that I'm not really crazy about that. Last I've seen, the default installation of the OS logs you right in, which may be nice, and it's nice to get right down to it and start using your Mac. But it's a little risky because then anybody can do that. And there are a few others I really don't use, but you may want to. So use secure virtual memory is another one. If you run out of physical memory, it'll create a swap file. Well, a clever person could look. In the virtual, memory swap files and get some data because it's storing, you may have important stuff in stored memory or in virtual memory. So that's another thing. Then I would say a few programs and other tips here. So one, there's something normally you can start up a Mac as an external disk drive, target disk mode. A lot of Macs support this. They have something that'll prevent that called Open Firmware Password. And that's a program that just disables that ability. So, you know, one thing is, yeah, even if your Mac is passworded, this, you know, if someone just holds down T and attaches it to another computer, voila, they have access to your hard drive. They win. A few others, now I'll agree, File Vault. I mean, it does secure your data, and yes, you should be afraid. I would suggest frequent backups. Now, that's another thing is if you make backups, well, your backups may not be encrypted, though I think some programs give the option for that. But be careful of your backups. If you have great security on your machine but not your backups, well, if someone finds your backups, they win. Again, there are a few things. Stuffit is a commercial option for you can create, you know, archives as well as encrypted archives. But here's and it's a very nice product, but here's a freebie. Disk Utility, you can create an encrypted disk image. Using either 128 or 256-bit AES. So that's nice. And a last thing here. Now, PGP, they used to have a free version. I don't think they do anymore. It's strictly a commercial product. There's a project out there that I'm going to look at in more detail called GNU PG. And they actually have a Mac version of that. So that's an open source version of the things that adhere to. I think it's called OpenPGP is the standard that surrounds things like signing and encrypting. So I'm going to look at that a bit more, but there's a quick list of all sorts of things. Oh, and the other one, I'm sorry. Lastly, if you go to accounts, login options. Here's the one that I said I was going to mention again. Show the restart, sleep, and shutdown buttons. There's a check here. You may want to uncheck that if you don't want people to walk up to a machine and be able to shut it down for whatever reason.
Oh, yeah.
that's so right. It's hidden in a weird place. Now, here's another display login window as name and password. Now, I think what that list of users, I'm sorry, list of users, it'll show the users. You may not want to do that because that's the first step to getting into a system is knowing the names of the accounts, right?
Right.
So you may want to default to name and password so it doesn't show, you know, give someone some hints here. There's another password hint. Depends on how, you know, scatterbrained you are or forgetful, whether you want password hints. You know, as you know, if I think it's three failures, you know, if you get the password wrong three times, it'll say, oh, would you like a hint?
Right.
You may not want to enable hints if you want to keep your machine secure. And I would say that's a good list of things to try out.
Yep. You could. Okay. So I'm going to add two things to that and then talk about a crazy thing and then we'll move on. So one thing is that with Leopard, secure virtual memory is on by default. And that I think was done so that Apple could get that Unix security certification out of the box. So that is now the way it is. You can turn it off, may make things a little more efficient, but I really haven't seen a problem with it, nor have I heard any reports thereof. Another thing to do, and I've been trying to look at my MacBook to do this, but remote desktop seems to keep quitting on the dual G4 here, so I'm not going to try it again. But disabling the IR port. Or at the very least, syncing your IR port to your remote only. Right now, I mean that's not going to affect your data, but it isn't a bad practice to do either way. The last thing is anyone with a Mac OS X DVD can boot your machine and reset your root password if you haven't set the open firmware stuff, and even if you have, that it's capable of being bypassed. So. And this is the crazy solution. Either take out or go in and remove the connector from your DVD drive so that no one can boot your machine with a DVD again. Hmm. I mean, you know, that's definitely an extreme, but it is worth being aware of. If you think you've got your machine secure, that is one gaping hole if somebody gets physical access to the machine. I know, Katie, you said you weren't as concerned about losing the computer as you were about having someone see the sensitive data. Well, there you go. So that's,
I wonder if somebody has to make a drive. Remember those things? Yep. I mean, especially on the older Macs and all that, it was a physical device that blocked the drive, or the extreme, just pull the drive out.
Just yank it. Yeah, there you go. All right. Moving right along here.
Hey, Jonathan, I have a question. A friend of mine, is a bit of an audio geek, and he recorded a bunch of his, or ripped a bunch of his music in AAC format at least 120 all the way up to 1,411.
Huh.
He got married. He has a new iPod. He's putting music on there, and of course, it doesn't all fit. Because of that, his wife wants him to clean it up. So we're trying to think of the best way to convert that music to a acceptable level. We decided to do 192, but all of the music that he has is not the same bit rate. Some are actually 128. We're wondering what you would suggest to have as the best way, all of that down to 128. And then the main thing is how to delete it. We were thinking of adding a playlist, a smart playlist that just had everything listed there above 192 actually, in a playlist, and then from there convert it. But to delete it, you can't delete it out of the smart playlist because it's a smart playlist. And if we look on the music library and sort it by bit rate, it sorts it by bit rate and not alphabetically unless the bit rate is the same. So that's our problem. We did the A's already, and we're trying to go through and delete them all, and we're selecting each one, and it's a pain in the butt. We're hoping that you guys would have some other kind of solution. So that's it.
All right. I thought about this, and I think, John, I've got an idea here. So you do the, you select the files that you want to convert, right? And you run the conversion on them. That's pretty easy. You know, select multiples and then just go to the special menu and convert. At that point, go to your view options in iTunes, which is under the bottom of the view menu, and make sure that date added is one of the items in the list. Then sort by date added. All of the new things will be at the top, and the old stuff, of course, will be at the bottom. Select all the old stuff, and you could even sort by date added, maybe, and bit rate, right? So that you've got, you've got a nice solid list. You got to be careful and make sure that you did it. And probably the safest thing here is reconvert everything, right? Even if the stuff is already at 128, reconvert it. And that way you'll be sure that you've got new copies of everything. Yeah, it would be very nice if there was a way to delete from the library something by way of a smart playlist. But I have not found a way to do that. I've not found a script that'll let you do that. If one exists, please someone write in and let us know, because it would be so handy for a lot of reasons to be able to go through into a smart playlist and tell it to delete. But I've never found anything on that. John, have you?
No. And there's one thing I wanted to add is you can also, and it's kind of weird with iTunes, is you can control click in the music list, and that also shows the different categories that it sorts by, and date added, from what I recall, is something that that is not normally there. So
right.
Another way to get to that a little quicker.
All right. John, I want to tell you about our second sponsor for this show. It's a new promotion being held at 20macapps.com. Starting February 1st, every fortnight, which of course is 14 days to you and me, one new app will be released, and each app will cost $20 a piece. Now, these are not existing apps. I know you've seen a lot of bundles out there where people are bundling together existing apps. These are all brand new apps that will be released for the first time as part of this promotion. Each one will be $20 each. The apps will be a mix of productivity, utility, game software, etc. However, if you pre-buy all 20 apps, you get all of them for $40. And that's a special for Mac Geek Gab listeners. The standard is $60. Along with that, the standard is $60 for a pre-order. Along with that, with the pre-order, you get everything one day early. And if you're over 18 years old, you'll be able to enter their beta program with limited space, but they are prioritizing Mac Geek Gab listeners for this. And then you can test these apps early. Remember, it starts on February 1st, but each app is released every 2 weeks. So this will last quite a while here. Guaranteed beta access is another $5. But again, you may be able to get that as part of your $40 because you're a Mac Geek Gab listener. They are going to prioritize that. Right now, if you sign up, you'll get a free copy of Billy Frontier, and there's a special Mac Geek Gab giveaway. If you could visit 20macapps.com/giveaway and choose the special code CIVIS. There's a list of codes. Choose CIVIS, C-I-V-I-S, and there'll be a drawing held, I believe, on January 2nd for three copies of the giveaway. And then after that, of course, you'll still be able to, if you don't win, you'll still be able to get in on the giveaway, which is, or not the giveaway, the $40 pre-buy, which is at the link that, that you've got right in front of you now, which is 20macapps.com/podcast. So that's that. You will hear more about this from us. Wanted to tell you about that as they are now sponsoring the show. With that, we'll move along to Chris, and I'll say hi to Pete. That we all heard Pete trying to Skype in and say hi. I don't think he realized John and I were recording the show here. Hi, Pete. So Chris writes in and says, I've had a problem that's been bothering me for quite some time now. I have an iPhoto library of about 1,300 pictures, and it has a lot of smart folders in it. They each look at the file names of the pictures being imported and then sort them out accordingly. The issue I'm having is that whenever I drag and drop in any amount of photos now, it will look like it's importing everything, then say finishing import, then nothing. The little album on the left side that says importing photos is there, and the little working icon keeps spinning, but there's nothing in the iPhoto viewer window, and the stop import button is grayed out. I can click on other folders and it will show me all my pictures, but I can't quit iPhoto because I have to wait until it's done importing. So I have to force quit it, and the next time I open it, the pictures that I imported are right there in my iPhoto library. Do you know what might be causing this? It imports everything fine, it just won't finish the import. He says he's tried to rebuild the thumbnails and that sort of thing, and nothing seems to remedy this. There's a couple of things that that I researched here, and then John, if you've got anything to add, we'll open the discussion up here. One thing first, there's iPhoto DB file backup, and we'll send you a link to this in the show notes here. And Michael, of course, from iPhone Alley, will put it right in the AAC right in front of you now. Then you can, once you've got a backup made of the iPhoto library, you can rebuild the library manually by holding down Command, i.e. Apple, and Option or Alt while launching iPhoto. And then from that option, choose Repair, Rebuild All. I believe that's what Chris has tried, but if it's not, then that won't hurt. Failing that, iPhoto Library Manager, again, we'll provide the links for you in the usual places, has a more exhaustive rebuild function, but you do lose slideshows, books, and calendars. You don't lose playlists, and I don't believe you lose smart playlists, but you do lose slideshows, books, and calendars that you've created. But that's a true rebuild. It kind of sucks everything out and then rebuilds it back in. So iPhoto Library Manager may be your solution here, Chris, and I hope that it is. So do you have anything to add to that there, John?
A little bit, yeah. I did some poking around, too, and found in a blog, which we'll link to, but someone pointed out that /private/var/tmp is where iPhoto, and I would imagine a lot of other applications, write temporary data. And so one could speculate that while, I guess one is to make sure that directory is there and has the proper permissions that you can access it. The other is just keep in mind that you may need some temporary disk space to do some of these imports, and if you don't have a lot of space free, that could impact the performance of the import operation.
Interesting. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Anything else, John, or do we move on?
Let's move on.
All right, let's move on. How are we doing on time here? I really do need to be aware of the time today. Don't want to miss that doctor's appointment. Okay, let's see. We will move on to Tim's question. Tim writes, I've been running an Intel Mac and iBook G4 on a Linksys wireless router for years with no trouble. Over the past summer, I found that I was not able to connect to the internet through either the wireless connection or the wired Ethernet connection running through the wireless router. I tried updating firmware and passwords to see if I could remedy the problem, but with no success. I figured the router was dead. If I connected directly to the internet without the router, I have no trouble. Today, I finally got around to buying a new wireless router, only to find that I'm still having the same issue with the new router. I am not able to connect wirelessly or through the wired ports on the router. When I open the network panel in System Prefs, it shows a green lights for Ethernet, network settings, and ISP, but red lights for internet and server in the diagnostic window. In retrospect, I'm thinking the trouble may have started around the time I finally upgraded to Tiger. I do not think this is the main problem, and as I've been able to access wireless internet with my iBook at work, school, or other open hotspots. I'm also able to access other wireless connections in my neighborhood, so I'm convinced there is something wrong with my connection between my computer and my router. All right, this gets interesting. I'm guessing you have a cable modem connection, Tim. John and I talked about this a little bit in prep. We actually had this question slated for last week's show. So it's been about a week since John and I talked about this. But I believe what has happened here, your cable modem, and almost all cable modems will do this, are programmed to lock to one MAC address. Now, MAC not being the Macintosh computer, but MAC Media Access Control. It's an acronym for the unique Ethernet ID of the device to which it connects. And when your cable modem powers up, the first device that it sees is the device it locks to. Now, most residential cable modem connections limit that to one MAC address per cable modem. At one point, I had a commercial cable modem connection in my office in Connecticut because of the way things worked out. And I actually had eight, so I could connect eight computers and then it would let eight out. The reason they do this is because they have DHCP servers that assign addresses at the cable company's, you know, back end somewhere in their network. And the DHCP servers don't really know where you're coming from, so they will assign an address to anyone. They're happy to do it. Any computer that can get to that DHCP server, bam, you get an address and you're, you know, automatically allowed out onto the internet. In order to limit people to the one computer, the one device that they're supposed to have connected to their cable modem, the cable modem locks to the MAC address and only passes traffic from the address to which it's locked. If you unplug your one computer from the cable modem and plug another one in and do nothing else, it will not let you talk on the network. Now, you can reset the cable modem, and typically powering the cable modem down, letting it sit for, you know, 30 seconds or a minute, power it back up, then connect a different device. So, you know, if you've got your, obviously it's locked to your computer. It's going to let your computer on the network, but it's not letting any of your routers. Power cycle the cable modem, plug the router in, then power the cable modem back up. You should be in good shape. If that doesn't work, it's locked at your cable company, and you're going to need to give them a call. And they should be able to do this for you, no problem. They shouldn't give you any trouble or anything. But that's my belief on this. And I think, John, you had some thoughts, or maybe I covered them because we already talked about it.
Kind of a related thing, but I've seen this happen, like, especially if you go to hotels or other places that, you know, sell internet service. And I had this happen once where, you know, I connected my computer directly and then realized, oh, darn, you know, I had my wireless access point. Let me plug that in instead. And like you said, I think what happens is those networks, they'll lock on the first device. And actually what this resulted in was them billing me for two connections because they saw two different computers.
Sure.
Or devices. Of course, when I went to them, I said, dude, I'm only one person in the room. How can you charge me twice? And they realized that that was silly. So, and I think in the bad old days, some providers would typically, well, I guess they all really have to. I mean, now with, you know, the advent of NAT and stuff like that, you really don't need to have multiple devices. You know, you're going to switches now instead of hubs and all that. So,
Yep. You got anything else, John?
Nothing else.
Nothing else. You know, I think I'm going to go ahead and bring the band in here, and as we fade away before our holiday tomorrow. I do have that appointment I need to run to kind of last minute here. So
this, yeah, the holiday, you can track the Santa. You know.
That's right. We're recording this early on Monday, early ish for us. It's about 11 a.m. Eastern here, which means I believe Santa's already on his way. But at NORADSanta.org, you can go ahead and track his progress throughout the evening for those of you that are so inclined. I know our kids really, really like it, and I actually get a kick out of it, too. So.
Yeah. How did he get through the airport?
I believe he's flying without shoes this year, and anybody that wanted toy guns or knives, those are going to need to be checked in the baggage compartment underneath the sleigh. I think that's
or any liquids or gels.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, right? If you thought Santa was bringing you liquor, man, are you wrong? That's right. And if he is bringing you toothpaste, it's only going to be the little tiny little thing. You can't get the full tube. Yeah. I'm trying to think if there's anything else to talk about here. Make sure you sign up for the contest for the Cirque du Mac 5.0 party. Of course, that's our big party at Macworld where the Macworld All-Star Band plays. And we've got Andrew Stone with his Vidiator doing a light show. believe we're actually going to mix up the face painters and that sort of thing this year. We will still have henna artists, but I think we might have some other stuff as well. Otherworld Computing, Audio Engine, of course, and Edemotic are all the sponsors for that party, along with Company Stuff, who has been making our t-shirts for every Cirque du Mac party we've ever done. We're really looking forward to it. That's Wednesday night at Macworld Expo. And I don't have my calendar in front of me, so I can't tell you what the date is, but I think it's the 16th. But you can go register for the contest, but it's Wednesday of Macworld, and I think you've got until January 2nd to win that contest, too. The podcast marketplace this month, of course, has the A5 and A2 desktop speakers from Audio Engine, BB Edit from Barebones Software, one free download from Audible, PDF Pen from Smile on My Mac, travel arrangements from Harman-eTravel, and 20MacApps.com. You can enter the giveaway at /giveaway or pre-buy the bundle at /podcasts. Other than that, I got nothing else to say, except I'm going to wish all of you a Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays. And John, hey man, Merry Christmas.
Ho, ho, ho.
Yeah. Anything else to get out there? Cashfly no. Hosting is where you've downloaded the show from. We will be back. We'll do a show, probably the same deal next week, I think.
You know, Dave, I feel really bad because, you know, Santa's not going to bring stuff to one type of person.
And what kind of person is that he's not going to bring stuff to, John?
Person that got caught.
Oh, don't get caught.
Made up.